everybody. Eve Harrow, Rejuvenation on the Land of Israel Network. May 2nd, 2021, Sunday evening here in Israel. You're hearing this in a couple of days from now. This was a day of mourning in Israel. The tragedy of Friday in Meron, 45 people killed in the stampede. I'm sure many of you heard at the grave of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. A lot of upset and blame, all of that's to come. But right now, really, for the last 2 days, just a lot of mourning. A lot of wonderful things came out of this as well, though. People donating blood all over the country for those who were injured. And, of course, wishing them a speedy recovery. And for the families who lost, some families lost two children. Like, it's really beyond comprehension. But really wishing everyone to somehow be able to come out of this and that we learn the lessons from this tragedy and that things aren't repeated again. And in a way, that leads us into the theme of tonight's show. There are things that we can prevent, and the best, of course, is prevention. I grew up with a father as a safety engineer, so that's kind of drummed into my mind, trying to keep bad things from happening. But unfortunately, all too often, terrible things do happen. And what we do afterwards to try and make sure they don't happen again, to warn people, and also, obviously, to help the people who were affected, is of huge importance. So a few days ago, in the Israeli papers, appeared my nephew, Effie Harrow, who is with us here tonight, speaking about something which I've known about, of course, for many, many years, a very painful episode in his life when he was molested as a child. And he is on the show tonight to talk about that, along with Professor Carmit Katz of Tel Aviv University, the director of research at the Charuv Institute, who coming from, not just as a human being, but coming as from an institution, how we can change the public discourse about sexual abuse of minors, and obviously how we can also prevent it, but also how we can all be aware. I'm sure that I am not the only one who has had to deal with this. One of my daughters was also molested as a teenager, and I can tell you that the fallout for her, for the family, for everyone involved, to this day continues to resonate. And so for me, this is going to be a difficult podcast, but a very, very important one. I love Effie ever since I set eyes on him many years ago. And his bravery in coming out and speaking about this with the sole purpose to prevent it from happening to anyone else and to put out the warning signs. And so, and we'll also hear, as I said, from Professor Carmit Katz on how the institutions, how we can train people to check for the signs and see what's going on. So Effie, maybe you would like to start, and I know this doesn't ever get easier, and I so appreciate your doing this because I'm sure many of my listeners, even if they don't know it, and some of them do know it very well, this is important for them to hear. So maybe tell us briefly about your experience.
Okay. First thing, thank you so much, Eve, for having us on the show. It's very important. Also, back a little bit back to Meron, I went to school there for a few years. I know the people there. Actually, my brother was there, his kid. Left 5 minutes before the tragedy. 5 minutes.
Yeah.
He left. Gilad, the little one.
Crazy. Right.
Very sad. So my prayers go out to them, to the families. And back, I grew up in a small yeshuv in Israel. And of course, before that, I grew up in Los Angeles. I was adopted by an amazing family that not only took me and took two other brothers of mine and bring us to Israel. I grew up in a small community that's supposed to be safe, surrounded by good people. In that time growing up, it started around between 12 to 16, 11 to 16. It lost my mind a little bit those years because I tried throwing it out. One of my brother's friends slowly started seducing me to buying me presents and getting my attention, showing off that that I was a very very strong, willing boy, very funny and outgoing, and everyone in the yeshuv and everywhere I knew me, and I always made people laugh and followers. But they didn't know the dark side, that in the night I would go to sleep crying and praying to God, why is this happening to me? Slowly by slowly, he started touching me and taking off my clothes and doing to me whatever he felt was good for him. For that time.
How old was he?
He was I think he was around his 20s.
Not a child.
19, 20.
Not a child.
Like that.
An adult.
No. None of them were a child. No. In that time, there was another person in the issue that also did to me whatever he wanted. Actually, also the second guy, it got into moments where he would lock me in the room and take off my clothes and lay me down on the ground and did to me whatever he wanted to do. And I would just be laying down, knocked out, not knowing what to do. And saying to myself, what did I do? Like, is this meant to be? Is this what I'm growing up to be? Is that people that are doing to me whatever they want, touching me, bringing me upstairs, locking the door, locking the bathroom door, making me do stuff to them to make them feel right, to make their feelings, you know? And it happened for a few years. And back then, it wasn't like now where everything's out in the, you know, out there. I'm not saying there's tons of kids in that are still scared to talk about it, but it's not our fault. It's none of our fault. We don't know why this happened to us. And even until today, I still sit down with myself and say, what did I do? Why did this happen to me? And it wasn't one time. They took advantage. They ripped my soul out. Until today, I still have feelings that even in jobs that I couldn't stay because I was scared that my boss was telling me what to do, and I felt like he was trying to take advantage of me. And it's not right. It didn't. It's not. But in my mind, my whole life growing was people taking advantage of me, of my niceness, my you know. And he would buy me presents and then let me smoke a cigarette and that. And then take me upstairs and take my pants off and do whatever he wanted to.
Did you tell anybody while this was going on?
No, I was so scared. I was so ashamed that I was so scared also what they would think in the yeshuv about me, about my family, what they would think about. Because in these yeshuvim, this like in American communities, Jewish communities, Muslim communities, doesn't matter. Everything stays in the community. And that's a problem. That's a big problem. And that's what we're trying to fix. We want to, me and Professor Kamit and their amazing staff and Lee, the writer for the Iton Haaretz, they care. They want to let it out. They want people to understand that we could talk. And the women Eve, the stories that I heard of women and children, it kills me inside. And enough is enough.
When did you finally tell your story?
I went to a premier. Well, in school, I was so bad as a student. I was so mad at everyone, mad at the world, mad at religion. I left everything, threw my kippah, they didn't care about nothing. I was so mad that what they did to me it killed me. I couldn't even get through school. I barely finished 12 years of learning. Thank God I came back and I worked on myself and I finished. And I went to the army and that's the story ahead. But they took me to a premier. They
a dormitory.
Not for anything that a dormitory. I didn't even do anything. I wasn't doing anything bad. They just thought it's a good place for me.
Because you were disruptive. Your behavior was disruptive, but no one realized why.
Yeah, no one realized. And I was out of control because they killed me inside. They killed me.
When was it there that you were finally able to confide in someone?
Yeah, and you know what? It was so hard for me to get through the first person that the second person my family didn't even know about. Professor called me. They didn't even know about it. I didn't have the kohot to
To
go
tell
at it
about the
again.
second abuser.
Yeah. So until the first one came there and confronted my family and said how sorry it was, and you know what? I didn't even go to the police. I closed it in the families, making sure that he would go to take care of himself and make sure that everyone knew, because everyone thought I was lying, of course. They blame me, of course. But at the end, it all came out because I stood on mine. I said the truth.
And he admitted it.
And he admitted it, yeah. And he came to my family and he sat with us there and he admitted it. And the second one, I'm still thinking what to do. I'm supposed to have a nice family get together this week to see, you know, I have so much love for my family, my brothers and the friends. It's amazing how it came out. And I already got a few phone calls from people saying it
Wow.
happened to my kids. Help, what could we do? And I'm just saying this, and Professor Carmit knows a lot more with how to deal with it with the families and that. But what I say is, be there for your children. Listen to them. Trust what they're saying. Let them feel with confidence. Let them come and say, these are my parents. I want to tell you what's going on with my teacher at school, if the kids in Pnimiyah. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter. It's happening every day, everywhere. And the kids will grow. It's the next future. It's the future, the children. And I have two girls, two
Yes, they
amazing
are.
girls that I hug and adore them day and night, even when they wake me up in the night.
An incredible wife, I have
It's
to add.
treasure.
She's
Oh,
a rock
my
star.
wife, she actually spoke in a school about it, and the teachers were last week they asked her to speak about it. And she, as a teacher, took a lot from me to help students to see, you know. And I think that also the school district in Israel and around the world, they're not listening to the children. You know, they're throwing them, they're giving them medicine and giving them Ritalin and to be relaxed, but something else is bothering them. And please,
So,
Professor,
Professor Carmeet Katz, first of all, kudos to you for what you're doing. It cannot be easy to hear the stories, to know what's going on out there. What have you taken upon yourself? Tell us about the Charuv Institute and how you want to deal with this from the institutional, political, however you want to put it, level.
First of all, thank you so much, Eve, for this amazing platform. And thank you, Effie, for being such an amazing partner to this journey.
Course.
The committee, this is the Israeli Independent Committee for Changing the Life of Children Who Are Sexually Abused. And this committee vision is to change the public discourse because, as Effie was describing, children who were sexually abused do not need to feel shame or self-blame. This is not the blame and this is not their responsibility. So our strategy is to talk to as many survivors of child sexual abuse as possible by their writing us letters or by talking to them. And then based on their testimonies, on their stories, what we want to do is all one is to change the public discourse in Israel and to start to put the focus on children. They're not responsible. This is the society responsibility to keep children safe. And the second aim is to change the policy in terms of, like Effie is saying, about the education system, to see the children, to listen to what they're saying to us, not to shut them, but to validate their experiences, to provide them trust and belief, and to provide them with the powers in order for them to disclose and to talk about what happened to them. And our aim is to, we started our committee in last August, and until coming August, only 1 year, we want to arrive to 1,000 testimonies from Israel. And we also have additional committees in other places in the world. There is a committee in Germany, a committee in the UK, a committee in Australia, and all of us together really trying to do an international movement to stop the blame and the shame of child sexual abuse. Because what we're learning in all studies is that all children who are sexually abused feeling shame and self-blame. And because of the shame and the self-blame, they're living with severe consequences all their lives. And we think and we believe that if we will break this connection, children do not need to feel self-blame. They should not feel shame. This is not their responsibility, but it's our responsibility as a society. And if we failed to protect them, so we should feel blame and we should feel shame. And I believe strongly that if we will cut this self and self-blame and shame, so we will change the lives of many millions of children worldwide who are now trapped in their homes and do not feel that they have the power to disclose to anyone. Not everyone are strong and powerful like Effie is. And Effie took his life in his hands and changing his lives. And you're amazing, Effie, because you were able to build a home and to build a love in your life, but also to give from yourself to change the life of children. And many children are need you. And they need the voices of the survivors.
So there's a few different circles here, if you will. There's the family. In certain cases, not Effie's, he has an extraordinarily supportive family, but some of the other people that were featured in the article in which Effie was also interviewed, one of the women, her father and her brother were the ones who were raping her. So there was no place to go. Her family was the danger zone. And of course, we've heard this. So there's where there's a dysfunctional family and the child is dysfunctional, to put it mildly, and the child is paying the price. Then there are parents who are trying to be good parents like most of us. My daughter did not tell me either. And that is something that I have to live with and think through. And then there are the teachers and or the counselors or other people who should be trained to pick up changes in behavior, to pick up warning signals that something is wrong. Once you have this testimony, are you going to take that and form like some kind of protocol? By the way, you mentioned a few other countries where the same thing is going on. If anybody is listening and either lives in those countries or wants to do something similar wherever you are living, the contact information for Professor Katz is in the text of this podcast. And be in touch with her, and she will be totally the all discretion and everything else that you need so that you can get this going. So what are the practical ramifications of the testimony that you are taking so that we can prevent this from happening any longer?
This is such an important question. Our aim is to carry out a significant policy change. So right now, we're already communicating with policymakers in Israel, although we still don't have any government. But we do hope that once we will have a government, we already make the connection with people from all parties in Israel. In order, the moment there will be a government, we're starting a process. We want to change the laws. We want to make other priorities. And we want, for example, one of the laws that we want to push forward is mandatory training for all professionals who work with children. Educators, physicians, nurses, of course, social workers, lawyers, judges, everybody needs to know to see children, to listen to children, and to pick up the signals. As Effie was saying, he was living in the day, but he was dying inside in the night. Of course, his body was screaming out, but nobody saw this. And if we learn about this phenomenon, about the children, maybe children will tell us more, because right now we know that on each child that find the power to say something during his childhood, there are 4 children who remain silent until adulthood, and X number, unknown number of children who will never tell us. And how do I know? Because they come into the committee in the age of 80 years old, 85 years old, telling me, Carmit, before I'm ending my life, I want to give you this story because nobody has this story of my life. And so there's,
so sad.
Yes, this is really heartbreaking.
And how about parents?
And
how do parents, you know, most normal parents, we just want to protect our children. On the other hand, we don't want to raise paranoid human beings who won't talk to anybody. You know, so I was having a conversation with my son and daughter-in-law over Shabbat. They have a 7-year-old son and a 5-year-old daughter. And they tried to talk to them about it. You know, like there was a man at the park who picked up my grandson to help him get on the swing. Should nobody be picking him up ever? You know, it was somebody's grandfather who happened to be there who wanted to help. Where do we find the balance here with still wanting our children to feel that people are good, inherently good, but also be able to protect themselves and err on the side of caution? And parents, we're not born knowing how to do this as parents. How is there also going to be some kind of plan to be able to give out to parents to try and help us?
Yes, definitely. We're learning from the survivors. They're writing us messages to parents, messages to children, messages to policymakers and to authorities. And I can share two key conclusions about parents. Like, one is to constantly say to your children, is there anything something that you want to share with me? Please feel that you can tell me everything. Even if you're afraid, even if you think it's your blame, I will always believe everything that you're saying to me. And make sure that you're taking the time to look your child in the eyes once in every while and tell him this message. The second is really, really important, not to teach children things that they cannot do. What do I mean? Many times in prevention programs, we're telling our children, if someone is coming to you, so scream, yell, fight, or through flight. And many times our children fail to do so because the body, as many children telling me, the body is not working when mm-hmm. something bad is happening. And it's really the most common behavior is
that's what Effie said
just
so beautifully. Exactly that.
Exactly. Amazing. This is most of the children, this is what happened to them, just lying there, trying to figure out what they can do, understanding that there is nothing they can do. They just need to survive this physically and emotionally. Not only that, but in our studies, we can see that if children try to flight or to fight, the abuse will be escalated and they will be severely damaged physically and emotionally. So what we're trying to say to both parents and educators, don't say to children, do fight or flight. This is really, really dangerous. But tell to your children, tell, disclose, and promise them that you will believe them. And think about an episode when your children are telling you about a fight between peers or when they did something wrong at school. Think about this like a small test for them to see how you will behave with the
interesting. They test us. They give out a little bit of information and see if we just say, and stay on the phone or go do something else. So, okay, exactly. To really be aware. Effie, do you want to add to what Professor Katz just said?
Well, I'm saying, first thing, it's amazing because also this talk is helping me as a father to two young, beautiful girls. In the process, it's helping me because I'm always saying to myself, I want to protect them. But then you know, you're always scared. Again, thank you so much, Professor Feldman, because this whole process is helping me again as a father. And when I would lay down and they would do what they want to me, you're right. You would just go into a shadow in yourself and just pray that it would end already. And there's so many things that I remember, and then I would like walk home alone and say, he's probably gonna ask me to come tomorrow again, you know. And it's all right, and also in school, when I wasn't behaving, all they would do is, he's a bad student. Mm-hmm. Let's throw him out. Let's find him a better school for him.
Right.
Let's do this for him. Never helped. They didn't care. Nothing, you know. I mean, these days, it's a lot more out there. And thank God for people that I met, like Eve and Professor Kalmi and Lee, the Itonai for Arets, that care, and they want to, and people you work with, Kalmi, that I'm sure that I'm going to meet with them, and they're amazing. We could change something here, and it's very important. And it's my dream. It's always been, and there has to be a reason why these things happen. And I hope I hope if I save one life, then I did mine. That's all I have to add. And I'm always here for questions and thank you. Thank you to both.
Professor Katz, will kids lie about this? You know, and the reason I ask that is because there have been some very public cases with older people where for reasons people have had consensual sex, but then the woman has later claimed that she was raped or whatever it is. All right. And that's a whole other subject, what happens to adults. And so there's sometimes a sense of like a doubt. Well, we're not going to believe the women right away because. But what about children? Do children?
My absolute answer is
they will not lie about being molested.
No child will lie about child sexual abuse. And my answer is not only supported by empirical evidence, but also by saying that we are so far from living in society that it's worth something for a child to disclose. Because right now, a child who disclosed child sexual abuse paying such an horrific price to his name, to his family name, to the prevention of his rights, to a service which is not adapted to his social and emotional needs. It's not
so
worth
it. So if a child says he was abused, he was abused. They're not picking it up. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. There shouldn't be any question about it.
Good.
Children, our problem
not
is the
talking.
Opposite. Most of the children will never tell us that something happened to them. And even when they say that something happened to them, like Effie just said, they have commission errors. Like they will say less than what happened. He told about only one perpetrator. He didn't have any power to talk about the second perpetrator because this is so demanding. This is so hard. And most of the children will not tell and will tell less than what
is there a difference between boys and girls and how they react or what if they'll talk more, if they'll open up more, or it's the same?
Boys will say less. Mainly what we're seeing that both boys and girls are being sexually abused. In this is the same statistic, but we are not as a society. Boys are being shut down more often than girls because this is really weird for professional to hear that and to think that it makes sense. And it seems to them maybe less reliable. In many ways, boys are mistreated in many, many ways. They don't have the legitimate to disclose their stories.
Wow, that's also important to know. Is there more sexual abuse of children now than there has been in the past? Because it seems now that there is so much. From the very famous case of Meshi Zahav, of this very well-known ultra-Orthodox man who tried to commit suicide, I don't even know what his situation is, where he was never put on trial. And I'm not saying he was guilty, but there were certainly many, many people who were willing to testify that children and adults. Is there something going on in our society now that has made this more prevalent, maybe because of the internet and child pornography? Or, and I know there's really no way of knowing this for sure, or has this always really been present in every society since the beginning of time? And it's only now really that people are starting to talk about it. So we realize, and it's just the tip of the iceberg, but at least we realize what something horrific is happening. What do you think based on your research?
Right. I think the answer has Two domains. Like, one of them is that, as you said, child sexual abuse is part, unfortunately, of the human history, and it all always happened in all the societies, in all the economic level status. But also it's important to say that in times of crises and in times of social isolation, there are more abuse of children. Like in COVID-19, we saw a terrible, terrible increase in risk context for children. When there is more racism, when there is more parental stress, when there is more economic burden, when there is more taboo, when there is more silence, when there is more distrust between human beings, the possibility that children will be harmed increases.
So you're saying that it's not necessarily that someone is a child molester, like it's not inevitable that this person, and I assume mainly it's males, but we know of also cases, there was the famous case of the Australian school administrator, females, but I would say it's, I would guess that it's mainly males. So it's not that this person is a pedophile and that's the way he is, that there's certain situations that will cause that to come out as a result of...
Yes, that we make it easier. For him, definitely. You know, many people, and it's shocking realize, but many people think about sexually abused children, but when it's easier for them to make it into reality, so they do it. And now with internet, there is a terrible increase in child sexual abuse online,
right?
Because it's easier to do it to children. And we know that when it's easier, so more people are engaged in it. People that we never thought would be part of it before are part of this.
This is so depressing. No, I mean, it's, you know, I grew up very naive. Were you, you know, you thought if you were going to be raped, it was going to be somebody jumping out of the bushes. And so much of the abuse that happens, I don't know what the exact percentages are people that you know. I mean, like Effie, it was the friend, it was Ben Bayit, as we say in Hebrew. It was a good friend of one of his brothers, someone.
More than 92% of the child sexual abuse are from people who the children trust. Not only the children trust, but children who their family trust them. So when they enter into the family, it's like, it's natural that they will close the door, that they will be alone. Nobody will ask.
And that's what makes it harder for you to come speak out, because you're scared what the family is going to think about.
An uncle, how can it be?
And for a long time, I would go to the show and I would feel like, what did I do?
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it's not happening now. I build myself up and I work and I stand tall and I let it out on Facebook and I let it out. But there are so many women and children hurting that are not speaking.
Is there, Dr. Katz, is there a difference in religious societies? I know that, I mean, I myself live in a Jewish community that's religiously conservative, shall we say? I mean, Orthodox in the name, but many of my listeners from one religion or another would consider themselves God-fearing people, let's put it that way, from whatever it is. Is there more of a difficulty in getting people to speak in these communities, either because of shame or because, oh my God, I sinned and I'm going to be punished? Do you find that there's a significant difference when you're dealing with those sectors of society?
Yes, definitely. In societies when there is more taboo and the price of both the child and his family is higher, then children would not talk. Not only they won't talk, but even if children dare to say something, they will understand the consequences and they will recant the allegations. So we have a lot of cases of children, very young children, who were able to find the power to say something that happened to them in closed societies, and they saw the tremendous impact for this on their family's ability to get married or to work or to be considered as good family in the society. And I remember a specific case of a 5-year-old child who told in the nursery what happened to her by her uncle. And after she disclosed, So the rabbi went to her family and tell them and explained them what is going to happen to the family, what is going to be the price. And she was in the room. She heard everything. And in the next day, she went back to the forensic interviewer and tell them, everything I said was a lie. Nothing happened to me. And the case was closed because there were no evidence. And if she said she's lying, that who can judge any other way? So more than 70% of the children who were sexually abused in closed societies will recount their allegations because they're
of the shame
of the consequences.
And that will happen to their family.
Yes.
So that means that those of us living in those kinds of societies have to work even harder to make sure that the children feel safe in saying what happened and that they will not be blamed and the family will stand together and protect the child, that the child is at the center of the universe, not the people around them and the reputation of the family for whatever that means. Because as the headline of the article where Effie appeared was, your story matters. The stories most definitely matter. But you know, Effie, the article about you appeared in Haaretz, which is more of a secular left-leaning newspaper here in Israel. I don't know how much of it would be read in some of the more conservative societies. Is there an attempt or a move to try and get it into some of the people who...
What, like the...
No, I'm even talking about the Hebrew papers. You know, each sector has its own papers that they read. Maybe that's...
I mean, the professors... I wish.
Is that a possibility?
I wish,
yeah.
But I don't know.
Professor, is that a possibility?
Yes, definitely. I think this is really an important direction that we should push forward to do so, to disclose and to talk about it and to provide a platform in many ways that we can. It's really, really important.
Just on a legal level, is there a statute of limitations in Israel for sexual abuse? Because somebody may say, you know, I'm 30 years old now. This happened when I was 7. I'm finally ready to talk about it. I'm in a relationship and I'm with a loving person, and it's allowed me to be able to, you know, share these things that happened to me. But if they went to you or to the police, can anything still be done?
No, unfortunately, we have this limitation in Israel. And as you said, like most of the disclosures of the abuse are happening in the stage of life when someone has significant other who can hold him and can support the disclosure. And then when there is the limitation of the ears, so the police cannot do anything. And unfortunately, we have so many cases in which people disclose, but they're the limitation of the ears really prevent the police to do something, although we know that there are minors at risk in those cases. Those people are sometimes therapists or teachers.
That's why it's time to speak up.
Right.
For them not to get hurt. Okay, if I can't go against them, that's fine. But I don't want the next child to get hurt.
Exactly.
That's what I'm trying to do.
Carmit,
especially the Vada.
Do people who have done this to children need help before they stop? I mean, I'm thinking about the people that hurt Effie specifically, who a case wasn't opened against them and they went on to marry or have families. What are the chances that they, you know, really said, oh, that was just a phase. It was a terrible thing that I did and that's not happening. Or does it mean that they just got maybe a little more careful?
Most of the changes, there will be
that's
more
all.
Careful.
They can't. This is something that they can't really change. They need therapy.
They need therapy to change something. They need to change their attitudes and their values and their moral. And maybe they have a trauma in their past that they need to walk it through. To be to sexually abuse a child, it's to cross such a red line. That in order to prevent it from reoccur, you need therapy. You cannot do it by yourself. And this is a call for the perpetrators who might hear us. If you don't want to do it, so go and have therapy. That's really important.
And maybe that's where the laws can be changed also. First of all, the statute of limitations, if it's going to take two or three decades for this to come out, maybe the legal framework should reflect that reality. And also in terms of the perpetrators, because we've talked about the victims, but in order for the perpetrators to stop doing what they're doing, there has to be something in place to ensure that, just as we do with any kind of criminal, I mean, a thief or anybody, a murderer.
Exactly. It must be. And even if there is legal proceeding, in most of the cases, they're going to jail only for a few years. After that, they're going back to the community and they will repeat their actions. So,
okay. So, Effie, anything else that you'd like to add?
Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you so much for standing up, wanting to prevent anybody else from going through what you went through. Nobody should have to do that. Nobody.
No.
And no. Professor Katz, thank you so much for what you're doing here and really not resting and making this international, because this is, I mean, it breaks my heart that this happens in Israel, but I know that it happens everywhere in the world. And I'm actually proud of the fact that in Israel, people are standing up and exposing, literally exposing what's happening, even though it is so incredibly difficult, in order to help others. And I really hope that if this podcast can help in any way, people getting in touch with you, people getting in touch with Effie to be able to share what they've gone through, and with you, Professor Katz, to be able to organize something so that there's more awareness. There needs to be prevention and there needs to be awareness of what's already happened. There's a lot of different things happening here, a lot of different layers. And just to this is not something that ever goes away. It really doesn't. And it is, as Effie said, you're killing someone's soul. And that just, as decent human beings, and that's who my listeners are, we can't allow this to keep happening. Every single one of us, without even knowing it, knows quite a few people who have been sexually abused. And it has to stop. It just has to stop. So thank you both so much for not an easy podcast and for sharing what you do. And people, listeners, if you have any trouble getting in touch with them, write to me directly, eve@thelandofisrael.com. And they have both more than willing to give out their emails, and you can be in touch with them and speak to them. And for those of you who have been hurt, I know that Effie can help you heal through what he's been through and his experiences. And I know that Professor Katz can help you figure out how this will not continue anymore. So thank you all so much for listening. This wasn't an easy show to do, and I'm sure it wasn't an easy one to listen to either. But if you feel that there's someone who should be hearing this, that it might trigger them to be able to open up about things they haven't been opening up about, then feel free to send it to them. And let's hope for good news and good things. And as we said, a full recovery to those in Meiron. And let's just stop. Let's just stop bad things from happening as much as we possibly can. As silly and naive as that sounds, I think every one of us, it behooves us to do that. All right, Eve Harrow, Rejuvenation on the Land of Israel. Thanks to Tabitha and to Ben for putting the show together. Thanks to all of you for listening. And take care, everybody. Goodbye for now.
Shalom, everybody. This is Jeremy Gimpel from the Land of Israel Network, but also from the Land of Israel Fellowship. We have members from 31 countries joining us every week, Sunday, live at 6 p.m. For those that can't make it live, they get a direct recording. Just go to thelandofisrael.com/fellowship. We're growing together. We're learning together. We're celebrating together. The gates are open for all who want to come and join us.